There probably is a lot of confusion in the church and people who call themselves Christians as to why things don't work. They go to church, they read the Bible, they do all this kind of stuff, but their life's still a wreck. Well, they're doing things out of order. There's an order to things. If you have never got to the point where you understand there is a God, that's the first thing. And then if you've never understood that you're a depraved individual, that's the second thing. And if you don't get them in the right order, you're not going to get a result that you'd like to get. Really, the result that you see in the Bible is really from people who understand that loving God is what's important, that it's a relationship. It isn't really an arrangement that they made with God. It's not a religious thing they've done. It's a relationship with God, and then this relationship changes everything about their life. And the relationship then is what gives them a position, gives them a purpose, gives them a... So it's the relationship they begin to guard. The relationship with God. Just like if one day you get married, the relationship with your spouse is what you guard. And so it becomes something that becomes all-consuming to you. And that's why we were talking about yesterday, the love of God, not our love for God, but the love of God for us compels us. It constrains us, as the Bible says, or it causes us to make decisions that people who aren't in love with God do not make. See, that's the idea of grace. When you look in Titus 2:11, you know, the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, and it teaches us to do what? To deny ungodliness and worldly lusts and to live soberly, righteously, and godly. Grace teaches us that. Well, how does that do that? In a relationship. Apart from a relationship, it doesn't teach you that. If you're not in a relationship with God, what happens is you believe that grace is a license. You don't understand that grace teaches you. And a relationship goes the other way then. Grace teaches you not to do that. We'll get into Galatians 2:20 this morning. It says, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now, that's really important to understand. What's the motivation at the end of that? The one who loved me. See, I understand his love for me. I responded to his love for me. Therefore, it's no longer about me. If you were to ask me to do something or you wanted to come over, whatever, my first response would be, I'll talk to Linda about it. Why? It's not just about me. I'm in a relationship. I'm in a relationship for 35 years. It's no longer Dave. It's always Dave and Linda now. It's always that way. Why? Because that's what relationships do. So I change everything about my life. And therefore, if you're talking to me and you want to do something, we could do it, but first I check it out with Linda. You say, oh, so Linda controls you. Absolutely. In that way. You know, does she make all the decisions in the family? Do I make that? That's a silly discussion. The fact of the matter is that we're in a relationship, so everything in our lives is about what each of us does together, not about what we do individually anymore. It's important to understand, as Paul said, as I've been crucified. You know, the different, the idea that God has in relationships is much different than the laws of religion. The laws of religion motivate us differently. If you've been steeped in religion, what you have is the love of habit, perhaps. We have people trying to get people to develop habits. Habits, you will develop them. Just do something enough times and you'll get to be a habit. It'll be a habit. But to depend on getting a habit to be okay isn't going to work. You know, the love of habit isn't what we're after. The love of reputation isn't what we're after. If reputation is extremely important to you, then you're going to be in trouble. Because you'll do things and you'll compromise for your reputation. In fact, if you look at those who actually understood, like Paul, who writes this, and others, their reputation wasn't that good. Oh, it wasn't that they were known for beating people up or whatever, although Paul was at one point. What they were, though, is hated by those who were religious. In fact, eventually they killed him. They were martyrs. So if reputation was what guided them, you know, I've talked to people say, well, I have a real good standing in the community. That's good. And you know, you should have a good standing in the community. And the Bible tells us if you're going to be a leader, you should be well spoken of by those from the outside. But they're from the outside. See, there's a difference. It's not they can speak of you from the outside. You're not a part of what they do. Power. Some people have the love of power. And believe it or not, if you want to be very wealthy and powerful, create your own religion. If you want to be wealthy and powerful, there's an old economics thing I was reading once about a guy that was talking about how much money can be made if you just start your own religion and how powerful you are. Some of these guys that have started religions, I mean, my goodness, the culture they have, they just boss people around. Everybody takes care of them. The guys will sleep with any women they want to, whenever they want to. I mean, women are just objects to them. And you want to be powerful, start your own religion. Why? Because you've got a bunch of people all fearful. And that's not about relationships. You know, power, you know, a lot of people use religion or the Bible to beat other people up and to hold them in rank. That's not what we do. That has nothing to do with relationships. Social position. Oftentimes, and especially in other parts of the world, their religious position is a social position for them. And so they have to be a certain place in a church or a certain position in order to be acceptable in society. The love of money. Again, if you want a lot of money, get into ways to be religious and scam people out of their money. Some people just have the love of future happiness. In other words, they're really about themselves. And they're thinking, well, you know, if my future is going to be okay, and there's nothing wrong thinking that way, but then their future becomes their God, not God being their God. And that's a very dangerous position again. Their future is not their God. Their partial public reverence, the people that actually look at them from the outside, they don't really know what they're about. Sometimes the love of no punishment. In other words, they're going through life thinking, I'll do this, 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 so I don't have any pain in my life. Well, that's fine, but that's not going to work. Or just the love of culture. Believe it or not, you and I live in a culture that has been shaped by churches and by religious thought. And so sometimes just the love of our culture brings us to the point where we act certain ways. What's really interesting here is the Apostle Paul, who is very much into culture, very much into religion at one point when he was Saul, very much into all of the stuff I just mentioned. If you understand who he was before he wrote this, if you understood the Saul-ness of Paul, he was habit, reputation, power, social position, money, all of these things fit him. And what he's saying in Galatians 2:20 is, none of those things reflect me now. Those things are dead to me. When the word dead is used in the Bible, or crucified, we're talking about something that no longer has any bearing. And here's what he's saying. I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. The life I now live in the flesh is by faith. The life that I live right now is by faith. We know that the Bible says that without faith you can't please God. What does this indicate to those of us that are in a relationship with God? That we better know his character, because he's going to ask us to do things that we don't understand. So you better know who he is. See, again, where does it start with? My love for God, my knowing who he is, allows me to walk by faith. I can't tell you how he's going to work everything out. I can't do that because I don't know. But here's what I do know. I do know him, so I can walk by faith. That means Dave Wager, my humanness, my personality does not need to lead me. I can let God lead me. Even if I don't understand it, even if it makes no sense to me. You are unknowingly in your life affected by a tremendous amount of inputs. None of you would say you're overly affected by them, but you are. The media in your generation, advertisements, television, all that stuff, but huge inputs in your life. They have already created a normal for you. See, what's interesting here is when you become a child of God, when you love God and you have a relationship with you, with Him, one of the things that happens is you become one who seeks after holiness or uniqueness, differentness. It's not that you seek differentness. You seek God and it makes you different. How does it make you different? You are now crucified with Christ. You no longer live for the passions of your life. You are no longer the one that wants to satisfy you. You want to now satisfy Him. See, now that comes from loving Him. I could tell you don't do this, and you probably shouldn't do it because down the road it's going to be painful to you. But when you get to the point where you do it for the right reason, you have grown and you are no longer religious. You are now relational. And that's the goal of all Christianity. That is the goal that God put us on the earth for, is to be relational with Him, with each other. And that's important to see. You will mess it up if you continue to try and put rules before the relationship or rules in order to have a relationship. Because every relationship is a little different, if you haven't figured that out yet. Every person is a little bit different. God treats every person a little bit different. There are same things, but in relationships, it can be a little different. It's interesting, Paul said this at one point, what shall I say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound? By no means. How can we who die to sin still live in it? See, the Apostle Paul was very clear about this in his own life. It's like, man, I imagine you've probably heard there isn't any real dumb questions, but I think the Apostle Paul would have said, yes, there are. Yes, there are. How can you live like one who is free but not be free? I mean, how do you do that? That's a dumb way to think. You know, if you actually love God and are walking with God, and God is the one now that is directing you, then the questions about how much sin should I have in my life? None. I mean, think about the lunacy of some of the questions we might ask. How much cheating on Linda would Linda find acceptable? None. How many activities in my life that would cause me to cheat on Linda would she find acceptable? None. Oh, come on. That's a little bit legalistic. No. It's relationally driven. That's not legalistic. I'm not saying you do that, you'll have a good marriage. You can still be an idiot and do that. It's relationally driven, though. The Apostle Paul said, what am I going to say? Because God is gracious and merciful? What, do you use God then for that? So you come to Him and say, boy, since you're so gracious and merciful, I can be a jerk to you, God. And you'll still be gracious and merciful. In other words, I'm going to use your mercy and grace for me. I'm going to use it to have you, you know, God, when I'm in trouble, I'm going to cry out to you. Until then, I'm going to ignore you. Right? Because you're merciful and graceful. So I'm going to do that. No, that's what Paul doesn't get. He's saying, are you even asking this question? How good is good enough? How right is right enough? In a relationship, we don't do that. Instead, we ask, what can we do, God, to walk with you and love you and represent you well? See, that's a different question. Now, all of a sudden, maybe the choices in our lives of people we hang out with and movies we choose to watch or whatever become through a different filter. They're not through the filter of legalism. They're through the filter of relationship. It's well documented that the movies that you watch, I don't know if you guys understand how much they study your brain, Hollywood, but they do, especially advertisements. You know the advertisements that are on television, they have people that they go and watch those things and they have their brains all wired up, and they watch how their brains respond to everything, and those ads are so particular, and so you realize they don't even want you to go buy their product right away. If they put an ad on television and you went and bought their product like right now, that would be like a tremendous ad right there. That one would go all over the place. But that's even not their goal because they know that's not going to happen. So what they try and do is change your mind frame over the long term. The people who, in other words, don't drink alcohol, they're trying to make it normal so that you do. People that don't use this deodorant. You know, I remember I was walking through a mall once and some lady came up to me with a bunch of deodorants and said, we'd love for your opinion on some of these deodorants. Do you have a minute for a survey? I said, no. I said, I've used one deodorant for 25 years. I'm going to continue to. Yeah, but you don't understand. There's better research. I don't care. I really don't care. It's deodorant. I don't care about your research. I don't care about anything. I'm not changing anything. I'm going to continue to buy what I buy. Thank you very much. I enjoy your job. I just don't want anything to do with it because I'm not going to change. Well, kept going on. See, the goal wasn't even that day for me to change for that company. The goal was to set me to where my mind frame would be willing to entertain change. So I ruined her day because I wasn't even willing to talk to them about the possibility. See, what's really interesting is Satan knows, he schemes, he does his best. That's the only way that we break the power of Satan is by loving God. And in loving God, Satan no longer has the power of using my feelings, my emotions, right? Because I have now subjected them to God. They're dead to me. Dead things control nothing. If there was a dead murderer laying right here, we would all be fine. We'd be creeped, but we'd be fine. Because the dead murderer will not be threatening us in any way, shape, or form because they're dead. And that's what we understand. Loving God means that Dave Wager is dead to the passions of this life that go against him. And it's not because of the rules, it's because of my love. For those of you that are struggling with allowing yourself or struggling just with sin and you're wondering, where can I get through it? What you're struggling with is your relationship with God, not the sin. You're struggling with what it means to be committed to God. If you ever get married, you know, the idea of being committed to another, here's the deal. Here's how God lays it out. When you get married, so you're going to be committed to that person for the rest of your life. There is no way out. There is no way that you should be thinking that there's a way out. There's no way. You are going into this relationship and you are committing to it for the rest of your life. That's what God says. You see, now when you start entertaining that there might be a way out, then all of a sudden, you do have that crack in the door that can be worked. The commitment to God is, God, I'm going to love you and walk with you. And there's no way out. I am committed to you. That means I am not committed to everybody else, no matter how alluring it is, no matter how suggestive it is, no matter how acceptable it is. I'm committed to God. When I do that, then I'm dead to the sin. It no longer calls me. Eventually, the dead things rot, and they get less and less appealing. In Galatians 5:6, it says, "For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision counts for anything, but only faith, working through love." What counts for anything? Not ritual, not rite. Oh, so none of the Jewish men should have been circumcised. No, that's not what it says. What does count? Well, when we start putting our hope in the things that we do instead of the person of Jesus, we're in trouble. Now, it's not that we don't do things after we put our hope in Jesus and we are. The relationship is going to put rules in our life. And any rules you have in your life because you're in a relationship are not legalism. They're not bad. They're good. It's the rules that are before the relationships that are in trouble. And by the way, they may not be causing you trouble in the fact that you should have guidelines and guardrails in your life before you're in a relationship to guard you so that when you're in a relationship, you are not all messed up. And that's where older Christians come in, moms and dads, churches come in, where we hopefully can get you to the point where you're in a relationship so that the relationship can work in your life and can be something that actually works to have give you the life that God wants you rather than just the rules. What you will struggle with is as you grow older, you were in an environment where you were protected by those who love you and they're Christians. And so they will tell you, don't watch this, don't do this, don't, why? Because they know that the stuff that goes in your head can destroy you down the road. So they're protecting you. What has to happen one day, though, is you have to get to the point where you understand your own depravity. You have to understand God's love and begin to do things because of your love for God. When you are a child, you don't necessarily obey your parents because you love them. If you're a three-year-old, it's not that you obey them because you love them. You obey them because they're bigger than you. And that's pretty much how that works when you're three. Now, my daughters are 32 and 30. They no longer listen to me because they're afraid of me. They listen to me because they love me. I'm their dad. See, that's different. Did they listen when they were three? Yes, because I was bigger than they were. Do they listen now? Yes, they actually do. Why? Because they love me. Big difference. Same thing. See, the trouble is if Krista and Sarah, my daughters, still listen to me because they were afraid I was going to spank them. That would be weird. But people do that with God. I'm afraid God's going to spank me. And God's going, when are you going to get over this? Yeah, but I don't want to be a legalist. Look, you may do the exact same thing before and after you realize this. Before, though, you're doing it as a protective measure. After, you're doing it because of a relationship. Look, either way, I will tell you, you need to be, for example, sexually pure. Before you're married, when you're young, stay away from pornography, keep yourself pure. I'm going to tell you all those things. Why? Because those things will damage you. Now, get in a relationship with God and get in a relationship with somebody else. Now you're making the decision to stay away from those things because you love these people. And believe it or not, what I told you here and what you're doing here are the same thing. Only now you're doing it for a different reason. That's why legalism is hard to get around, because what happens a lot of times is we just throw the word out to shut people up because we don't understand what it means. We think it means rules, but it doesn't mean rules. I got rules in my life because I love Linda. See, that's not legalism. That's right. For Christ isn't about ritual, only faith working through love. You know, if you love God, you know he's older than you, smarter than you. He loves you. You can trust him. So you act like you trust him. If you don't act like you trust him, you don't trust him. If you don't trust him, the question is why? And I would tell you because you don't know him. What's the answer then? Get to know him. Why? Because once you get to know him, you'll trust him. Yeah, but then that's legalism. I got to get to know him. That's not legalism. That's wisdom. You know, you can't get to know God if you're not going to spend time with him. If you want to get to know God by going out there and chanting and sitting and closing your eyes, not going to work. You need to open the Bible, look at it, see what he says. You need to understand his communication with man. You need to meet somebody that maybe is older than you that knows God and loves him and talk to him about it. See, now you can start to get to know God. But once you get to know him, then you start to act differently and you begin to work by faith. See, I know this. There is nothing ever. None of you can touch me unless God lets you. We've talked a lot about recently, I've had, believe it or not, because of the radio stuff I do and things, I've had to have some guards around me at times because churches where I go speak are threatened and my life is threatened at those churches. And I don't really say much. The people that really don't like me is because they're I won't tell you why, but it's not a good reason for anybody. Now here's what's interesting though. I can spend my whole life worrying about some nutcase coming with a gun and shooting me. I could do that. Now, when you speak to crowds of thousands, I have friends who are pastors and they have to have guards sit in the front row and up there, because after the message, you know, you talk to people and people are throwing through walls and stuff. So, you know, we live in a weird time. But here's what I know for sure. There's not a gunman that's going to walk through that door, point a gun at me and shoot me. I understand the consequences of sin, and I understand all that stuff. But it could also be that God says, it's not his time, and the guns just go click and it jam. That isn't his business. I will go on the day I'm supposed to go, and God already knows that day. It's already predetermined. I'm already out of here on that day, whenever it is. I'm okay with that. Does that mean I don't have guards or whatever? No, that's, you know, it's like God knows when I'm going to die, so I'm not going to eat anymore or whatever. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. The bottom line really is that we live in a way where we trust God. See, I actually know God, and I know that nobody has control of my life, whether I live or die, other than him. See, that's living through love, and I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that nobody has control but him. That's a good thing. 1 John 2:3-5, and by this you know that we have come to know him. Some of us might say, how do I know if I know him? Well, if we keep his commandments. Here's where we get it all messed up. This is where we started. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Yes, it's if you love me, you keep my commandments. Not if you keep my commandments, you love me. Then here it says it, and by this we know we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. For those of you that are struggling following God, you do not know him. You know more about what's going on in Hollywood or on the internet or Facebook or Snapchat or Snap whatever or Pound something. You know all those things. But you don't know God. If you knew God, you'd actually act like you know him. And for those of you that are struggling inside, see, that's your issue. It isn't that we can give you more rules or guidelines or anything else. We can't do that. Oh, we can give you rules and guidelines. I mean, we could do that. And it would be for your good to follow them, actually. It just doesn't put you in a status where you belong. We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. Whoever says I know him but does not keep his commandments is a liar. Now, that's pretty direct. For those of us that say we know God, but then we just live as if we don't, or we live in sin and we go against what he says, we're lying. We don't know him. And the truth isn't in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Look at this. If I listen to what God says, it's the love of God that's perfected in me. It isn't Dave Wager that's perfected. It's the love of God. From the very beginning, you got to understand, it's all about God. It's about loving God. It's about being responsive to God. It's about his love for me. It's his love for me that motivates me. It isn't my love for him, because my love for him will wane, fail, whatever it might be. It's his love for me that stays the same. So that's what I count on. And when I understand that, and in our evangelical world, the way we live, we can all say, yes, we love God. Yes, we want to listen to God. Yes, whatever. But if you're not obeying him, you don't love him. And if you don't know him, you don't love him. So you need to spend time getting to know him. That's what you need to do. If you're struggling with sin, I'm telling you, turn the TV off, turn the computer off, turn your phone off, pick up a Bible, or I guess if you're using your phone for a Bible, whatever. But get in the Bible and let the Bible teach you. Dish room people have to go if you're a dish room person. And the most important things I'm going to say now after they leave. Just kidding. All right, another verse. 1 John 5:2-3. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and obey his commandments. By this we know that we love the children of God. Say yes, we were put on the earth to do two things. What? Love God, love each other. All right. So if I were to come to you and say, how are you doing on those two things? Oh, I'm doing great. All right. Are you lying to yourself? No. How do you know? Because we're really good liars to ourselves. We don't even know when we lie to ourselves. But here, I'll tell you how you know, because God gives us a way to check it out. He says, by this we know that we love the children of God. We love other people. How? When we love God by and obey his commandments. Oh, when you're obeying God, you're actually loving people. That's why I say the church can't be about people. It needs to be about God. Because if it's about God, and I'm loving God, and I'm listening to God, then I'm treating you right. Now I'm about people. But if I'm about people, I may not be about God. I may go back to that religious thing. Very dangerous. By this we know that we love the children of God. When we love God and obey his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome. To those who are loving God, when God says something, it's not a burden to us. It's not like, oh my, I have to be faithful to you, God. No, if you love God, this is a pleasure. You know, if you love God, I still think when a woman gives birth to a baby, it's amazing to me the contortions that woman's body goes through to do that, and the inconvenience, you might say, that's there, and the absolute love and delight that they have in that child. So there's something about that. It's not burdensome to them to have a baby. It's a privilege to have one. Yeah, well, there's some, you know, hard points. Well, of course. But it's not burdensome. See, that'd be a different word. When young ladies are pregnant, they have this glow about them. I don't know if that's a scientific term, but in my experience, they have a glow, and I call it the pregnancy glow. They have, you know why? Because it's not burdensome to them. Now think about it. If they've done it in the right context, they get married, they're committed to a husband, they are committed to life, to one another, and now they're expecting a child. That's not burdensome. That's joyful. You see, as you go through life, as you listen to God, it's not a burden to listen to God. You are not being punished because you know the truth. And oftentimes, Christians think, well, those people who don't know God, those pagans out there, man, they don't know. They really can live it up. And it's such a burden. It's so hard to follow. It's not a burden to follow God. It's a privilege. It's not a burden to not mess up your life. It's not a burden to, it's an honor to love God. And we have to understand that that's the way it is. The problem, we do not love God, we love ourselves. And really the fruit of loving self is loneliness. And I'm not going to get into that too much with you, but that's the fruit of it. When you love yourself, so you've put yourself in the place of God and nobody could ever satisfy you. So you're out on this island all by yourself and you have to take care of yourself. And you're the only one that really cares that much about yourself, taking care of yourself, trying to do everything for yourself, and you're missing out on everybody else. Those people who die to themselves and love other people, they're never lonely. They really aren't. Those people who love themselves tremendously, they're lonely often. Even in a crowd, they're lonely because they're still all about themselves. And since nobody knows how important they personally are to themselves, they are all alone in this crowd. And really, that's the way it is. Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare, not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Again, this was said to Jeremiah. It just gives us an indication how God looks at our hearts, our lives. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. And you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. God says, look, I'm here. You need to seek me. When you do, I promise not to hide. If you have not found God, it's not God's issue. It's yours. You haven't really looked for him. Well, I'm looking for him over here. He's not going to be over there in that situation. He's not going to be in that movie. He's not going to be in that, You know, don't read The Shack to try and figure out who God is. Read the Bible. Don't read what people are saying about God to understand God. Go to God. Give him the chance to reveal himself to you by himself instead of having other people reveal him to you. You see, if you seek him, always in the Bible, we're told this. If you want to know God, he'll let you know him. So we're the only ones that stop us from that. And that's important for us to see. A couple of quotes I'll end with. T. Manton said, he denied himself for us that we might deny ourselves for him. See, Christ already gave us the example. We just follow it. He already showed us. He didn't say, do something I didn't do. He said, here's how you do it. Charles Spurgeon said, it is the distinguishing mark of God's people that they know the love of Christ. That's what distinguishes us over all others. We actually know the love of God. We know it, we respond to it. If you don't know the love of God, you're not responding to it. If you don't know the love of God, you're still trying to earn the love of God. You can't earn it. It's not available that way. He gives it to you. Seek him. Get to know him. Once you get to know God, the logic follows. When he says something, you want to do it. Why? Because you know who he is, you know his love, and you want to do it because you know him. Those who don't know him, yeah, they've spent their whole life going to Sunday school, maybe looking at the Bible, casually hearing stories, creating a God in their own head, but not understanding who he is. You know, there's a point where you say, God, I need to get to know you, and I need the love that I have for you to start directing my life rather than the love I have for pleasure or myself or rules or whatever else it might be. I guarantee you that as you love God more and more and as you know who he is more and more, your life probably will become more and more restrictive, not more and more open. As I've lived with Linda for 35 years, there are very few doors that other people can get into to destroy that relationship. Because through 35 years, we have become closer and closer. And, you know, some of my friends are shocked. Linda gets every one of my emails and gets to read them. She gets to read all of them, you know. I have an iPad. She has an iPad. It's set up identically to mine. Everything I get, she gets. Someone will find that odd. Nah, you know what? There's no secrets there. There's no secrets. I'm out in public. There are actually ladies who would email me, problem, that kind of thing. I want her to see what they're saying, and I want her to see I'm not even answering them. Why? I'll answer them once, and I'll say, here's a lady you can talk to. Right, because I don't want to get involved in that, but I want her to see it. See, what happens is, as you get older, you get even more restrictive. Why? Because the relationship's so precious, you're guarding it with everything you've got. And part of guarding it is truthful honesty, that kind of stuff. So, you see, it's important to realize that the thing that we have that distinguishes us is the love of God. Isn't rules, isn't regulations. But the love of God, the way we know we have it, is because perhaps of the rules we put in our life. The problem is the rules don't tell you anything. They don't tell you whether you love God or not. They just tell you got rules. So that's why God says, if you can understand this, don't judge people. Why? Because it's too complex. It's too complicated to judge them. Half of us don't understand why we do things ourselves, much less somebody else. And if you can't understand why you yourself do something, don't be there telling other people why they're doing it. God knows, by the way. Oh, and by the way, he does love you. And if you would just come to him and seek him, you'll find him. When you find him, you'll enjoy him. And when you enjoy him, you'll start adjusting your life for him. When you start adjusting your life for him, then all of a sudden the things that used to call you don't call you anymore because they've lost their grip, their power. It's that simple. Father, again, thanks that we could meet. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the freedom we have in loving you. I ask you to bless this group today. Keep us safe here. Allow this day to be a great day of relational building. In Jesus' name, amen.